SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online at our website too, stevebick.com. And for us, the closing morning of the first half of the year, the broadcast year. And of course, after a nice freshening, little turnout. I say that now, but I imagine by next Wednesday when they draw the cards for for Queen's Plate and for the United Nations, I'll be hard pressed not to dive in too. Now, you can't get too far away. Believe me, you spend a week away, 10 days away, whatever it is, and you'll find yourself, you know, completely obscured. So we'll keep in touch, without a doubt. But I got to admit, you know, we always get to this point. A big part of it is after the Triple Crown, which there's the travel and everything that goes into it. The emotional part as well. That'll wear you down a little. So it's Tina's last day of school too. So it's kind of cool that she's going to start her vacation, and that of course gets her till past Labor Day. For me, little 10 days. We'll be back July 5th, just in time for what is really a terrific weekend that follows. And the weekends that follow here, I mentioned, you know, two of the things that will anchor the first weekend of July, and that certainly includes the Queen's Plate. Keith McCalmont, Triple Dead Heat himself. Keith will join us this morning after the first break, and we'll get a Queen's Plate advance, so you got a handle. And it's interesting because it looked like there was going to be about 10. Now the gate has filled up, apparently. And so you'll get a little look ahead to next week. And I didn't want the Queen's Plate and Woodbine's big day to go, you know, at least unpreviewed completely. LoSalle gets underway as well. And then, of course, we'll also, when we get back, you know, be looking at the start of Ellis Park as Churchill winds down next week. The debutante and the Bashford and two-year-olds will be on everybody's mind as they leave. And then through the summer at the Pea Patch, we've talked about what a great job they do, and how important the two-year-old racing has become at Ellis. And in fact, one of the hard stories that I've got, you know, kind of sitting here involves Ellis via Kentucky Downs. Kentucky Downs distributing a good chunk of that money that they have really done a wonderful job helping Ellis and Turfway, and the Red Mile, of course, got its own as well, and so forth. So Kentucky Downs also getting the okay for another close to 500 historic racing machines, and they're going to build another room. It's been really a great story. And, of course, Corey Johnson and his team trying to get maybe a few more dates out of this. In the meantime, the extra money is helping the year-round circuit in Kentucky, making do with what they've got, obviously. So, looking ahead and also appreciating this weekend. We'll talk to Nick at the top of hour two. I'm going to look ahead to the action at Canterbury. Really strong. Ed DeRosa later. I'm sure he'll be all excited about Thistledown and the Ohio Derby. There's also, even though it's just a simple $75,000 overnight stake, the Roxolana, Churchill's late action tomorrow. I mentioned this yesterday. The pick five late is really strong. And I ended up printing that whole sequence. But we'll talk plenty of handicapping. Hammer, of course, as we get to the end of Santa Anita's long run going back to December 26th. We'll try to slip in. Hopefully Ed looked at the Chicago handicap. If he didn't, I did. The Evangeline Mile, I'll mention, too. There's a nice $100,000 mile event. The heavy favorite, Dazzling Gem for Brad Cox. That will be a very short price. And New York, kind of a quiet Saturday, you know, still in the after effects of the big Belmont Stakes three-day racing session. Mother Goose next week at Belmont, and then the Stars and Stripes Festival. And we'll be back and ready for that. Jay Hovde is going to join us this morning, too. I thought it'd be nice to get Jay in here to kind of wrap up Triple Crown from his perspective. He's written a handful of columns. Obviously has been intrigued and moved as Jay is, and his eloquent approach. I thought it'd be nice to kind of wrap up a little bit from that angle. Our friend Kevin Humphreys is going to join us from London. He's not at Royal Ascot today, but he will handicap tomorrow's closing day at the Royal Ascot stand. And we'll listen in today, bottom of the hour, the Albany. Another chance for Wesley Ward. And, boy, the more you saw the replay from yesterday of Joel Rosario's ride on Shang Shang Shang, I mean, absolutely in control and so confidently ridden and really being applauded wildly, frankly. And another chance this morning, Stillwater Cove, who draws the outside number anyway, draws the 18 numerically, but is actually going to leave from the four. And Stillwater Cove and Rosario will try to build off of yesterday. Stillwater Cove not as heavily regarded here as Shang 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 was yesterday. And after we left you yesterday, should mention in that fifth and sixth, there were two more very notable price plays based on what we've discussed. And that is the price in the bookie shops versus the price on the tote. And I tried to tweet it before it was too late, and could not get it to, you know, out. We finished literally at 11:59 yesterday. That Ostilio for Simon Crisford, and of course so long associated with Godolphin, and now out training, and this is a nice win for him. Sylvester D'Souza with a brilliant ride on that Ostilio, and Ostilio 29.80. And was as high as 21, I think 21-1 when I looked, and was 10-1 in the bookie shop. Then late, Ostilio came down to like 13-1. But it was a glaring disparity, and Ostilio got to the lead on the near side and just a great ride by D'Souza. And then in the nightcap, Baghdad was kind of evens with the market and the tote. But Corgi, there was a nice spread on Corgi, and Corgi ended up running well and finishing second, but Baghdad was a nice winner for Mark Johnston. The pick four that had the carryover, the pick four paid $970 yesterday, and by all rights, that was a crazy parlay. I mean, you looked at Shang was 840, Hunting Horn, who was everybody's first or second choice, 1180, Magic Wand, who was absolutely, you know, one of the obvious players in the Ribblesdale, and Stradivarius. I mean, it's Stradivarius, Vizierabad, and oh my gosh, who misfired? You were going to use all three. So for that to pay $970, there was a $40 over carryover. So the pick four, maybe, you know, maybe people pay a little bit more attention here the last couple of days. It's not available. It's a new bet for Royal Ascot, and it's not available everywhere. And as a result, I think, you know, some people, you know, wondering why the pools aren't bigger. And I think it's just because it's, you know, next year, I imagine they'll have, you know, a better distribution, more widely available. But yesterday's, if you played it, you were hard pressed not to hit it. I mean, honestly, these were all horses that were going to be on your, you know, that had to be on your short lists. So we'll get some help today from Kev Humphreys. Kev's had a absolutely fabulous stand so far. He is dialed in on a number of the oddball horses that have come through so far at Royal Ascot. And the NBC coverage today on the big network, and tomorrow. And, of course, tomorrow, the Diamond Jubilee, the big sprint finale. Today, in addition, of course, to this opening race in the Albany at the bottom of the hour, the third race today, Jidou, the Frankel, Todd Pletcher, and Johnny V. Going to be a bigger price, I imagine, in the shops than on the tote. There's also in the Coronation today, which will be the last race we can give you, the wonderful Clemmy for Coolmore in the Coronation. And that's a nice group, too. So we're looking forward to the last four events for us at Royal Ascot. Couple of things before we head to the break. From yesterday, I wanted to get in a couple of results that we had, you know, kind of hinted at, or at least, you know, were aware of going into the domestic action. And how about at Santa Anita, Bizwax ended up going off at 5-1 for Doug O'Neill and was moving comfortably enough, but you could see that Drayden Van Dyke on the Eclipse Firster stirred, shaking it up, and boy, Stirred, who was $150,000, one of these two-year-olds from Shaking It Up in the first crop that caught notice during the two-year-old in training sale season, and Stirred, a first-out winner for Aaron Wellman and his partners, Mike McCarthy, and Bizwax had to settle for second. Today, by the way, we'll talk about it with Hammer, but I mentioned again that Parsimony for Redham and O'Neill. This was the other two-year-old we talked about. This is the Dominus that was a big ticket at the March OBS sale. Happens to be a half to lovely Loyery, the Michelle Boyce that's going to run at Canterbury tomorrow. It's just funny. I happened to notice, had seen lovely Loyery in the entries, and then there she was, the sibling to Parsimony. You also had a two-year-old group at Churchill that's worth noting, and the always dangerous Horacio De Paz. De Paz really has done a great job for Sagamore, and the half to Blamed. The stake winning Blamed? Yeah. The more than ready colt chased greatness in a second start. A winner and won pretty well. Beat the 4-5 Carter Cat, the second time starter for Asmussen, Winchell, and Mr. Horton. There was also notably a nice debuter that I was kind of watching. Jimmy DeVito has got a half to Rapid Rhythm for Love of Country. Was a okay third in here. It was 6, 7, 8 lengths back, but decent debut. So we'll keep an eye on this race. There's a good maiden filly group today. And also on the house cleaning front, let's quickly run down the stake races that we didn't get to from earlier in the week, and that included at Presque that Carl Boyce Memorial we talked to Dick Powell about, and Downtown Cowboy, the Cowtown Cat gelding for Shane Myers. A nice win, $33.40, beats, among others, an Extravagant Kid did not run great for Brendan Walsh, the 2-1 favorite. But Scott Spieth aboard. There was also at Finger Lakes on Monday, I didn't mention the Niagara. He had four horses vie for favoritism. Crashing Connie, Jim Wright for Joe Gentile, a Courageous Cat filly. And she wins the Niagara. It happens, I'll mention it, since this was a Courageous Cat filly. From out of last week at OBS, we've acquired a Looking at Lucky colt and two Courageous Cat fillies. And I'll get some more. They're about two-thirds of the way partnered up. But three New York breds that'll be running at Saratoga. At Delaware as well, on Wednesday, the Christiana, peach of a gal. How often do you get Grand Motion like this? 16-1. Yeah. The Curlin filly for Glen Angus. A winner over 23-1 Frippery. Tesora did not, even money favorite for Jonathan Thomas, did not run particularly well. Kind of a late, showed up a little late. And I've got some Indiana stuff I want to do at some point later. All right, I'll save that, the Indiana. We're looking forward to the Albany. We'll start looking toward that. And we'll talk, since we're talking the Royal Meet at Ascot, how about the Queen's Plate as well? Want to get a advance from Keith McCalmont. He'll join us from Woodbine. Weekend preview at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races. Keith McCalman will join us in just a minute, and I'm pulling up the numbers at Royal Ascot for the Albany, about 8 minutes away. I want to mention one maiden race today at Belmont. In fact, it's the opener, and it's a 3 o'clock start today. They've got the twilighty party in the park action. There's two notable names here, and the first is Bruce Brown sending out a Lumber Guy gelding out of a Werblin mare at Hushin, named obviously for Mike Hushin, and Bruce actually bred the horse, and really very nice. And it's funny, the entire field has connections one way or another to Hushin. Not only is there a horse named Hushin and this Lumber Guy, there's also a Lumber Guy from the rail for Adam Wachtel, a horse that he bred called Lumberer. And then there's also a Barry Schwartz homebred with Pletcher called La Forza. And then finally, there is a sibling. John Kimmel sends out one for Toby Morton, Bronx Bomber, a Take Charge Indy colt that is a half to Sean Avery. So really kind of an interesting race that where Mike Hushin's influence is dripping all over it. Kind of neat. So I wanted to mention that one for you today, and also pulling up the numbers from Ascot. Here we go. All right, well, got that as a backdrop. I'll start to feather that in as we say good morning as well to Keith McCalman, and wasn't going to go on vacation and not provide at least an advance preview of another historic Queen's Plate running, and it's on Saturday this year. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Where are you headed on vacation?
As it happens, we'll be in Ontario at least briefly, from the Thousand Islands, then over to Montreal, and we will cross over and get a few minutes in Ontario. But I toyed with a Queen's Plate visit, and Tina said you're supposed to be taking a vacation from racing. So So that was
come on up here and be a fan at the races for a day. We've got a 3-day Queens Plate Festival. We got Brad Paisley on the Friday night, Sam Roberts Band on the Saturday, a whole slew of graded turf races. I mean, that sounds like a vacation to me.
It is. If I hadn't spent the last six months, if I hadn't spent it pretty much at racetracks completely, I would say it's a vacation. And then, of course, Saratoga looming up, 40 days of that, plus actually three at Monmouth. It's for me, it never feels like an overload. And I think that's true for most of us, Keith, right? If we're in it, we love it.
For some reason, I seem to keep taking my vacations at racetracks and other locations. It's a passion position.
I love it. Exactly. Well, give us the overview. And I gave people earlier in the week, it just so happened we connected with Catherine Day Phillips off of another big win for her this past weekend. The week before, of course, Dixie Moon wins the Woodbine Oaks. And so I used that as a kind of a cornerstone of a little bit of a Queen's Plate advance, but it feels like the field is filling out from what I saw from you yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it's a 16 horse field, and I honestly think it's kind of there's maybe five horses that have a legit shot at winning it, but there's no standout. You're not going to get a 3-5 horse that makes this a difficult betting race. This is a race where Telekinesis is going to be your favorite based off of a win in the plate trial. It's one of three runners for Mark Cassie. Telekinesis got his start down at the fairgrounds. He then went up to Keeneland and had a very bang-up performance in a stake race there, finishing second in the Grade 3 Lexington by a head. And what they decided was this horse could run on synthetic. And so instead of sending Flame Away, their Kentucky Derby contender, up for the plate, they sent Telekinesis here and Flame Away to the Ohio Derby this weekend. So I think Telekinesis is your Queen's Plate favorite. But lately, the fillies have been the ones bossing these races. So I'm talking about horses like Holy Helena and Lexi Lou. And so they actually ran the Oaks, which was on the same day as the plate trial, in a faster time than the plate trial. So can Dixie Moon get a mile and a quarter? That's the big ask. And can Wonder Godot finally figure out how to finish off a race? She missed in the Kentucky Oaks by a half length. She missed in the Woodbine Oaks by a head. Millions of dollars in purses and what it would have done to her breeding page by less than three quarters of a length. And Mark's going to add blinkers on next week and try to get her to focus.
Now, it is a question. I've been very much a Wonder Godot fan going back to last year. Mark Cassie gave everybody a big trial balloon warning about her early on in her career. And it does feel like she's the type that has to be timed perfectly. And you can't ask her too far in advance of the wire to get in front of horses. And this is not a new phenomenon. I mean, the horse that is most easily connected to that style is Perfect Drift. And these are, you know, there's horses, they're pack animals, and there's horses that don't believe they should be at the front of the pack. So you have to time them so they hit the wire basically at the same time that they're reaching the leader. It's a very frustrating scenario. She's got the talent. It should be very interesting. Talk about some of the other players, because you know there are some horses here that are lurking that have, you know, plenty of potential behind the top three.
An interesting one is Alternative Route. This is one trained by Al Stahl. It's owned by Spendthrift, and it's a pretty expensive son of Tiz now. Won the Rushaway at Turfway, so you know it can handle synthetic. And prepped for this race by going to Arlington, to the G3 Arlington Classic, and finished an even fourth on what was a yielding course. So I think this is a horse with a lot of upside that may have some form lines that are better than what they appear. There's a very, very nice Stronic horse by the name of Silent Poet. This is a horse who was on everyone's radar as a buzz horse around here. the son of silent or of silent name, super well bred, but it's never gone further than 7 furlongs. 2 wins from 3 starts. Now you got to go to 1.25 miles on the turf, or sorry, on the poly track or on the Tapeta here. And what my concern with this horse is that he may be a turf miler, trying 1.25 miles because there's $1 million at play. Very similar to what Heart to Heart did here many years ago, trying the Queen's Plate before going on to become the G1 turf miler that he is now. Graham Motion sends up 2 contenders, Strike Me Down and Say the Word. Strike Me Down looks like the most talented of the two. It's the $300,000 son of Tappet, and broke its maiden here at Woodbine to start the year off, going 1/16, and then just missed in the tail of the cat at Monmouth. I think that rounds up most of the top contenders in this race, but we've got a really, really solid group of jockeys in town. We're going to have Flan Giroux, Javi Castellano, Jose Ortiz, John Velasquez. There's going to be a lot of familiar names on the card, and not to mention the fact that for a 13-race card, we've got 3 graded turf races, as well as a BC Win and Urine event with the Highlander.
Well, and we'll talk about the rest of the action. Let's pause here for a minute, Keith. We're looking up to Royal Ascot. They're loading, and really seems like an honest board. One disparity might be La Pelosa, the Charlie Appleby Godolphin runner looks like a value. Here's the Albany.
Over Fairyland on the far side, Réponse Exacte trying to get as well. Just wonderful switching across towards the far side group as they race through, scorch through the first quarter mile, chased on the far side by Howayel and also by Chicas Amigas over there, and then behind those at the back of the field is Just Wonderful that side. Meanwhile, down the stand side, it's a Main Addition that leads to La Pelosa. Byron Bay is travelling well on the heels of those, then Octave towards the right with Pretty Pollyanna and Naka Cond and No More Regrets, and at the back of those is Merry Go Round. Now Stillwater Cove has been collared by Chicas Amigas on the far side. Fairyland is coming at them as well as they run down towards the final furlong and a half. Main Addition doing well on this side from Godolphin's La Pelosa. Entering the final furlong, Fairyland chase. Angels Hideaway giving chase now under Frankie Dettori. Fairyland being capped up by Angels Hideaway far side. Main Addition down the centre from La Pelosa. Main Addition could be in front. Main Addition, La Pelosa. It is Main Addition that holds on from La Pelosa. Fairyland probably third on the far side, then Angels Hideaway, and finishing off well behind them, Pretty Pollyanna and Byron Bay.
Well, Mark Johnston closed out yesterday and opens today 6-1, one of the about the third choice in this group, and Main Addition was coming with that horse I pointed out, La Pelosa. This is the Appleby Godolphin, and was 12-1 in the bookies, 20-1 in the tote. And again, every single, actually got bet down a little bit to 13, but every single race there's a horse being pointed out, at least one, by what's happening in the bookie shops. But Main Addition is going to provide a mild upset here. This is a Zoffany filly, and James Doyle aboard. So Johnston, technically with back-to-back wins, having won the sixth yesterday, and Fairyland, who was pretty much favored with Just Wonderful for Coolmore. Fairyland, Aidan O'Brien, and this is actually a Stockwell Coolmore combination. Fairyland's going to have to settle for third. So numerically, 10-9-5 to open things up. And Wesley Ward and Joel Rosario, Stillwater Cove, led for close to half of the 6 furlongs, and then started to retreat. Brief thrill, but I mean, was going off at a big number. So Main Addition kicks things off here on the fourth day of Royal Ascot. Back to Keith McCalmont. Keith, run down the other features, and he said, really, it's a 3-day festival. Some of the other highlights beside the plate.
Yeah, we kick things off on Friday here with a 3 o'clock post time, actually. We're going to start a little later in the day. There'll be a restricted stake with the Lady Angela on the Friday. And that'll lead right into the Brad Paisley concert to end the night for those of you that are coming up for the weekend. Saturday's card, the Grade 1 Highlander is a win in your in event for the Breeders' Cup. Last year, Green Mask took this race. Dance Smartly is a mile and a quarter on the turf on Saturday. Last year was an awesome race. Reina de Bateria and Starship Jubilee dead heated for the win. I understand that Holy Helena, a past Queen's Plate winner, is on the grounds and could be pointed towards this race. The G2 King Eddie at a mile on the turf always features some of the top turf horses in North America, and my personal favorite, Tower of Texas. And then the Saturday feature, of course, the Queen's Plate, 16 horses going a mile and a quarter on the Tapita. And it's an awesome card of wagering, Steve. We've got two guarantees in the pick four, 200 early, 300K late, and two pick fives, 100K early, 100K late. And both of those are 20-cent minimum wagers. So it's going to be a real quality card to dig into. And then on the Sunday, which is July 1st, Canada Day, big holiday up here, we've got two stakes. We've got the Grade 3 Dominion Day, a mile and a quarter on the Tapita, and the Bison City, which is the second jewel of our Philly Triple Tiara, at a mile and a 16th on the Tapita, which the Bison City of late has always had a little bit of trouble because the horses that do really well in the Oaks end up running the plate. So there's a bit of an opportunity for another filly there to step up.
Well, we're looking at the two big fillies that are heading into the Queen's Plate a week from tomorrow, June 30th, the 159th running, keeping an eye on Dixie Moon and Wonder Godot. And, among those long shots that you covered, you mentioned Florent Giroux riding, Nipawa, certainly a player for Cassie, a horse that he really had, I think, high expectations for and was identified as a plate contender, you know, early on. Should be terrific. Telekinesis, of course, as you mentioned, the likely favorite. Keith, we'll be watching, even though we're not going to be there. And then when we get back on July 5th, we're certainly looking forward to recapping with the plate connections. Should be a terrific, as always, day and weekend at Woodbine. So best of luck.
Thank you, Steve. I'm going to keep tweeting at you to see if I can't get you to come down here anyway. It's only a couple hours.
Well, include Derby Barbie in there because she's the one that she's sort of turning over the reins for 10 days. She puts up with my decision making most of the year.
For everyone else, please do follow along at Triple Dead Heat, and we'll have lots of notes daily leading up to the race Saturday, June 30th.
Well, the great team up there, and of course Woodbine Dawn as well, and they do an amazing job, and hopefully going to be up maybe for the Woodbine Mile come September. That's been our most recent Woodbine trips. Keith McCalman, thanks so much. We will step away here and come back and check in with Jay Hovde before the first half of the year closes out, and wanted to get Jay in for his ultimate summary of the Triple Crown. He was, even though I didn't see him, now that I'm thinking about it, Jay and Julie Crone, of course, they came to Monmouth and then to Belmont, the kind of a whirlwind tour. We had spoken to Julie earlier in Belmont when we were at Belmont, remembering Colonial Fair and the big anniversary of that historic win. Jay particularly enjoys these historic moments and writes about them so beautifully. Join us next. Nick Tamaro to come as well. Our friend Kev Humphreys from London to give us his look at the Saturday card. He's been picking all the virtually every 30 and 40 to 1 type horse Kev Humphreys has had somewhere in his analysis. So we're going to get him in here. One of our favorites. Kev Humphreys goes back a number of years to when at the beginning when I started Derby Trail, and I forget who met him But he kind of was a young Irish college kid, and he was, you know, coming over to the races, and somebody, the group, you know, from Derby Trail, our horse playing, racetrack attending lunatics, befriended him, and we've known him ever since. I mean, it's 10, almost 15 years. And he loves the game. He travels all over the world. We'll get some insights from him for the closing day at Royal Ascot. Back after this with Jay Hubney.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey guys, Mikey here to give you a little update on my friends at ExpressBet. They've once again been named the preferred U.S. betting site of Royal Ascot. Sounds pretty important, right? Well, let me tell you, it's a pretty big deal. Royal Ascot is hallowed ground for horse racing. They have so many stakes races and give away so much money that even the Queen shows up to watch. The Queen! But let's face it, I'm not going to Royal Ascot this year, and odds are you ain't either. That doesn't mean we can't bet it, though. In fact, ExpressBet is running a 0% takeout promotion on the all-new Royal Ascot Pick 4. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Sign up today, and you can choose between a $500, $100, or $20 bonus. So don't forget to bet Royal Ascot, June 19th through the 23rd. The races kick off at 9:30 a.m. sharp on the East Coast. And if you see the Queen, tell her Mikey said, hey, what's up? Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Exciting daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action returns to beautiful Orange County with the opening of the Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet on Thursday, June 28th. It's three great weeks of daytime Thoroughbred racing at Los Alamitos. First post is set for 1 p.m. Pacific each racing day. We'll race Thursday through Sunday during the opening week and closing week of the meet, while the second week of the meet will include a special Independence Day card on Wednesday, the 4th of July, followed by racing on Friday through Sunday afternoon. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet will feature three exciting stakes races, beginning with the Bertrando Stakes, highlighting our special 4th of July card. Other stakes races include the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes on Saturday, July 7th, and the Grade 3 Los Alamitos Derby on Saturday, July 14th. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider for major daytime thoroughbred racing in America's longest home stretch. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet opens on Thursday, June 28th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific. For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
One look, twice so. People on the way, she looks at me. Held up, let down. She sings me silent.
We're back at the races, rumbling and swaying through a weekend preview. But also, in addition to the preview, I wanted to do some review. And who better than Jay Hovde, who gets even more prolific than usual during Triple Crown runs. It seems to bring out Jay's, most ardent and ardorous kind of writing, and that included a piece that really I thought was overlooked just because it came in such proximity to the Triple Crown try and success, and that was the one that evoked Jack Whitaker. And we spoke to Jack a couple of years ago, and was one of the real highlights of the time that we've done the show. Jay Hovde, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Excellent. And ready for a little turnout.
Well, I have to tell you though that it was a pleasure to speak with Jack. He's been a friend and colleague for a long time, and he's been one of those guys at the top of the mountain for me in terms of journalistic integrity and just a deep and abiding love for horse racing. And it showed. I mean, all you have to do is search through a few old YouTube broadcasts of CBS or ABC Triple Crown coverage, and Jack's there with his eloquent commentaries at the end of the shows, or his trenchant observations during the course of the broadcasts, and he was there for all of it, going way back. I guess my hook was the fact that here's a man, still with us today, still very much paying attention to the game, who is alive for every one of the Triple Crown winners except for Sir Barton, and I couldn't hold that against him.
We've got on our best of page the visit with Jack, and I took cuts from the 73 Belmont broadcast with him and Frank Wright and. One of my favorites, in addition to Whitaker, Hayward, Hale Bruhn, and the extemporaneous eloquence, Jay. It's a lost
you're
art.
You're having trouble to extemporaneously express it.
Yeah, because it's
we all do. We don't. He wrote his essays, like on the back of matchbook covers and napkins in about 15 minutes, and then hit his mark. I mean, that's just a facility that only the great improvisational actors have. It's just one of a kind. One of the best things about Jack and the coverage of that he was involved with through the years of horse racing is that. They went through the Triple Crown, and of course that was pre-Breeders' Cup, so that was the highlight of their broadcast year, but they still had broadcasts later in the year. Jack was a part of a local broadcast as well as national broadcasts, and the Triple Crown, rather than being the be-all and end-all of the season, kind of whet the appetite for what was to come, because the three-year-olds that emerged from the Triple Crown races were going to be the horses that were going to be tested later in the year against the prevailing older stars. And so they always sort of were, while they were dealing with what was right in front of them, the excitement of the Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont, they were looking down the line to the Woodward and the Marlborough Cup and the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the races of the fall that would truly define the greatness of those three-year-olds that they were seeing in front of them. Guess what? We don't get that anymore.
Now, and that's one of the things that motivates the whole milieu. It motivates you so often, and it's what is so engaging. Talk a little bit about your trip with Julie, because there were all kinds of historic overtones to that as well, and how you view this. Santa Anita's long season ends on Sunday. Justify's going to parade. You wrote about that yesterday. Some thoughts about the 13th Triple Crown.
Well, my contention is that the more Triple Crown winners we have, the better, especially in this modern sports culture. Because, every year we have, the NC2A championships. Every year we have a Super Bowl. Every year we have a World Series. And those things perpetuate the excitement that spreads just, past the core supporters of sport, of a particular sport, into the broader, culture and population at large. And if racing only has, you know, individual events that sort of exist in isolation, a Derby, a Belmont, a Breeders' Cup, then they don't really, you know, break out. And the Triple Crown is the one thing that that if it can happen more often than it does, I think it's for the better. You know, we found that that long drought with between Affirmed and American Pharoah really sort of, I mean, it made for some exciting Belmonts, but it just sort of, it was like air going out of balloons on a regular basis, and you had to gin it up all over again. But I think now that we've had two Triple Crown winners in the period of 3 years, I think people are going to realize that this is something that traditionally can be achieved, and it's very, very special when it does, and all they have to do is look at the coverage, and it becomes a self-perpetuating event. I think, you know, justifies a very worthy Triple Crown winner. Problem is, we probably won't get to know just how good of a horse he truly is, because, let's face it, when you just run against your own age group, that doesn't tell you anything more than that. And that's why we were so satisfied to see American Pharoah run against the older horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic, even though he was not challenged by the best older horse in the country at the time, who was the Mare Beholder. But he still beat good horses led to him, and he was able to go into the sunset with a far more satisfying story than we're likely to see with Justify. That said, we don't know. They could change their mind, and Justify could have an interesting campaign the rest of the year. But the dollars that are involved with his future kind of dictate otherwise.
From afar, leading into Belmont, Jay, what did you sense about the environment and the response to the horse's exploits up to that point, you know, versus, you know, what had be kind of become a, I don't want to call it a desperate hope, but that's not inappropriate. Then the postscript as compared to what we dealt with 3 years earlier.
Well, I mean, are you talking in terms of the way the race itself unfolded, or
no, the public, the race focused public and the, you know, the more somewhat disinterested general sports public that seems to take an interest during a run like this?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything either surprising or particularly negative about that. I mean, look at sports like golf. Pro golf has trouble, you know, gaining any kind of a regular foothold even during its majors, unless Phil Mickelson drops his pants or something like that. I mean, every one of the major sports, the big elephants in the room, they have to fight for their spot. And, you know, the world we live in now with social media, it doesn't make things more broader, more democratic. It concentrates attention rather than disperses it. And, you know, if horse racing can have a horse like Justify that, you know, makes occasional magazines and the evening news here and there, then, you know, that's all for the better. And, you know, what better way to do it than going for a Triple Crown? The Triple Crown, at least, the name itself, that brand, is something that is, I wouldn't go so far to say universally recognized, but is certainly something that people, when they hear it, they think, oh, isn't that something about horse racing, and you know, take it from there. And I think he, you know, this year he took it and ran with it. It was you know, it's always a wonderful experience.
We're going to need, obviously, to see where the story goes and where he, you know, where he runs, assuming it, there's going to be more starts, and you know, then there'll be the normal process of
evaluating, you know, the historic proportion and you know, where he stands and all that. I made the point that it felt like it was such a unusual success and so unlikely, Jay, that it is kind of hard to digest and for people to really understand. I maintain that it's going to be a while before people understand what this horse did in short order.
Well, I'm a bit of a contrarian on that score, because I think we're going to see something like this happen again in reasonably short order.
Interesting.
The trend for these large stables is to have waves of young horses come at you, whether it's Baffert or Brown or Asmussen or Pletcher. They will have their summer two-year-olds, their fall two-year-olds, their late winter, early three-year-olds. And for one reason or another, whether it's physical development or getting over small injuries or, you know, whatever the cause, they're so fully stocked at those levels that with good horses in all of those categories, that you're going to see them kind of rolling out. And whether or not, you know, we're going to see horses that are like an American Pharaoh who ran well very early and then, you know, soldiered through minor injuries to get to the Triple Crown level, or whether you're going to be a Justify that they just flat couldn't go on with him because he was a bit backward and a little too growthy as a younger horse. I think we're going to see. And there have been so many that have come closer, at least in terms of the Derby, in the past, that you know, if Tim Tam hadn't run once, and if he hadn't gone wrong in the once at two and gone wrong in the Belmont, we would have seen Justify basically 60 years ago. So I just don't think that this is it's unusual in terms of data and statistics and, you know, that sort of thing. But as a function of training and development of horses, I don't think it's that surprising. And, you know, Bob Baffert, he gets out there sometimes. He takes chances. He calculates what horses can and can't do as well, if not better than any of his contemporaries, and goes on with it when he can.
You also, Jay, you wrote about some of the controversial parts of the storyline. You've followed up the last couple, last week or so, with a couple of stories that we should touch on today, tomorrow at Canterbury, Jockeys in Jeans, and it also gave everybody a poignant update on Marlon St. Julian. Also what Mike Smith is going to do from a fundraising standpoint in New Mexico. And it's, you know, any time's a good time to appreciate the peril that the jocks operate with, and, you know, the occasions when you know, lives are so, you know, so heavily impacted.
Well, I don't think anyone who watches and follows horse racing gambles on it, or is it just a casual fan is misinformed about the dangers of riding these animals. It's such an anachronistic sport. I mean, when you've got you know, Formula One racing, which was once the most deadly endeavor that any athlete, sportsman could go through, when they haven't had a casualty in a race for, gosh, years and years now, and you turn around and look at how jockeys are protected compared to Formula One and car racing, you know, this is like the Dark Ages out there. So, in that sense, they're providing thrills and chills that no other sport does. And the more we appreciate it, the better. And the more that the game itself is able to take care of its injured athletes, the more we're going to be part of the the modern world. And right now, it's a little bit backwards. It's when jockeys go down, people pass the hat, and they hold karaoke fundraisers, and scratch their heads and wonder how they're going to do years from now, and then they're forgotten. So those things need to change. Things move slowly in horse racing, except for the horses.
I also can't venture into the jockey discussion at all without referencing the piece you wrote about female riders and the anniversary of Julie's achievement on Colonial Affair as the key element. But you addressed from a historic perspective the challenge that continues to be out there when it comes to female riders. There's plenty of room, but it's, as you said, still a man's world.
Well, it is, and there are so many reasons that young women aren't able to pursue jockey careers, from the cultural prejudices and stereotyping body strength and aggression and those sort of testosterone laced arguments to simply the fact that perhaps young women today have more choices and their embrace of the equine world is larger. Young women dominate in the horse show world. They dominate in just about every other riding discipline, short of rodeo. And so being a jockey may be just one of many choices they have, and they look around and they see these cruddy women's quarters at racetracks that, they're asked to live as third-class citizens while the boys have the first-class facilities next door, and they're subjected to all manner of, tawdry comment and, all the kind of things that we would hope that we would outgrow eventually. Maybe we've missed many, many, many talented young women that just took a look at the game and said, nah, no thanks.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting perspective. I always enjoy the chance, Jay, to get your summaries of what is flying by us in rapid fashion. Some anticipation for the second half of the year.
Accelerate, absolutely. We're all in California. This is the great red hope out here. Well, he's not that big, but he's a tough nut. I think we're going to see him have a second half of the season that he has not been able to muster in his younger years, although he did run well in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile a couple of years ago. But he has won. He's won the two major mile and a quarter races for older horses in California now, the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, and before that the Santa Anita Handicap. He ran a bang-up race on the road at Oaklawn, the City of Light, who was trained to the minute by Mike McCarthy, and added the San Pasquale earlier in the year. So he's compiling one of those resumes that we like to see older horses do, and they're not going to shirk anything. He's getting a bit of a break. He'll point for hopefully the San Diego and the Pacific Classic, and then onward to the Awesome again and Churchill Downs and the Breeders' Cup. So, hey, if he wins all those, let's see how that stacks up against the Triple Crown.
Well, it's, of course, a home game, as Jay Pribman likes to say. It's a home game for you coming up, Del Mar, Jay. And I put up a link to the Jack Whitaker piece and give everybody a link to all the, you've been you've been banging away at the keys here the last particularly, you know, not that you aren't prolific normally, but it seems like there's been one topic after another that has grabbed you by the lapels.
Well, just sitting here enjoying a little champagne breakfast and watching Royal Ascot like everyone else, Steve. You know that.
There you go. Nice. Well, we're a couple of minutes, in fact, coming up just right now. We're going to come up to the second and the King Edward, the group two. Jay Hovde, always a pleasure for all of us. And I want everybody to – I'll send everybody the whole link, and you just click on it, and there'll be all of Jay's most recent pieces. And there's just – I mean, he's really – I'm used to seeing him, you know, once a week, every, I don't know, six to eight days. It feels like he's putting something out every 2 days of late. And it's what prompted me to get Jay in here. Before we take the break and before Nick Tamaro joins us, and we're going to do some capping with Nick, obviously, let's get a gander here as they get ready for this King Edward. They're going to go the mile and a half. Favorite currently, Ra Atoll, and I guess Delano Roosevelt as well. And also, well, yeah, now it's, okay, Delano Roosevelt, 3-1, 5-2 on Ra Atoll.
Well aboard Ra Atoll in a red and yellow jacket and has the advantage early on. Elector jumped well, but it's just being reined back as Rostropovich in the blue and orange moves up to apply some pressure to the pace. They freewheel downhill through the first couple of furlongs, and it's Ra Atoll leading narrowly to Rostropovich. Old Persian in a raw blue jacket is close up out wide. Then Giuseppe Garibaldi with a white cap disputing fourth place with Elector the Scarlet Sleeves. Ryan Moore, meanwhile, has got Delano Roosevelt in a purple and white jacket, slightly worse than midfield, shadowed by Highbrow in the dark blue. Alternative Fact in a pink and grey jacket, pulling hard towards the rear of the field, upsides Wells Fargo, the red cap. Beginning to bear right-handed now at Swinley Bottom, heading to the end of half a mile in the King Edward the Seventh Stakes, and it's Ra Atoll who leads at a leisurely gallop. Old Persian has now taken second. A length away, Rostropovich racing in third. Then Elector, who just about has his nose in fourth place ahead of Giuseppe Garibaldi, three parts of a length away to Highbrow as they begin the climb and approach halfway. Moore still sitting patiently with only a couple behind at this stage aboard Delano Roosevelt, and that pair Alternative Fact with the pink cap shadowed by Wells Fargo. On towards the final five furlongs, Frankie glancing in behind aboard Ra Atoll. He's got them well stacked up on his tail. Old Persian in the raw blue is close up in second. Rostropovich against the fence. Elector is a little deeper out. Then the white-faced Highbrow, the shadow to Giuseppe Garibaldi. A length and a half Delano Roosevelt, Ryan Moore the purple cap ahead of Wells Fargo, and Alternative Fact is just last as they leave the half mile behind them and now begin the swing back towards home in the King Edward the Seventh Stakes. Frankie in front here on Ra Atoll, now being pressured by Old Persian and Will Buick. Elector being driven along a couple of lengths away wide of Rostropovich, then Giuseppe Garibaldi. Delano Roosevelt at this stage hasn't picked up. Old Persian now puts it up to Ra Atoll as they come inside the two. Old Persian leaning into his rival. Ra Atoll boxing on under pressure. Rostropovich is staying on, then Giuseppe is staying on, then Giuseppe Garibaldi and Elector. Old Persian in front, drifts to the front, drifts to the rail as they come inside the furlong. Rostropovich and Giuseppe Garibaldi. Ra Atoll is rallying. Old Persian is all out here, fending off all his rivals, and Old Persian lands the King Edward the Seventh Stakes. So Rostropovich, Giuseppe Garibaldi in third, and Ra Atoll was back in fourth.
Well, Old Persian, who took a lot of late money, boy, ended up going off as the co-favorite, had been third choice, and ended up at 5-2. William Buick, Charlie Appleby, and Godolphin. And boy, it has been a very good late spring, early summer for Appleby, including the Derby win and a couple here so far at Royal Ascot. So there you go. The King Edward the Seventh, second of four. We'll look to the Group Ones next, including the Commonwealth Cup Jidou for Todd Pletcher. And faces 21 others in the Commonwealth. Yeah. Judmont, major player in here.
Equilateral, and you've also got Sioux Nation for Coolmore, a couple of the big players in the Commonwealth. We got a big player next, Nick Tamaro. Nick's going to join us, and we're going to probably jump around a little bit. I wanted Nick to look at that sequence at Canterbury, which has got big, bulky fields and tough races to figure. The Lady Canterbury, the Mystic Mile, and the Mystic Derby. Should be a very nice set. I hope the weather's going to be nice. I didn't even think about that. Let me get a glance about while we're on the break and see, hopefully, Minneapolis-St. Paul tomorrow. Hope it's going to be nice. And Vance Hansen is going to pinch hit. Vance going to join us. Kev just got a hold of me. He is not going to be someplace where he can visit. So we're going to go to Vance Hansen for the Saturday Royal Ascot preview, and we'll see how Vance has been faring so far this week. He's had some ideas about the pick four and other price plays. Nick Tamaro, though, starts off hour two. We come back.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, guys. Mikey here to give you a little update on my friends at ExpressBet. They've once again been named the preferred U.S. betting site of Royal Ascot. Sounds pretty important, right? Well, let me tell you, it's a pretty big deal. Royal Ascot is hallowed ground for horse racing. They have so many stakes races and give away so much money that even the Queen shows up to watch. The Queen! But let's face it, I'm not going to Royal Ascot this year, and odds are you ain't either. That doesn't mean we can't bet it, though. In fact, ExpressBet is running a 0% takeout promotion on the all-new Royal Ascot Pick 4. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Sign up today, and you can choose between a $500, $100, or $20 bonus. So don't forget to bet Royal Ascot, June 19th through the 23rd. The races kick off at 9:30 a.m. sharp on the East Coast. And if you see the Queen, tell her Mikey said, hey, what's up? Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Exciting daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action returns to beautiful Orange County with the opening of the Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet on Thursday, June 28th. It's three great weeks of daytime Thoroughbred racing at Los Alamitos. First post is set for 1 p.m. Pacific each racing day. We'll race Thursday through Sunday during the opening week and closing week of the meet, while the second week of the meet will include a special Independence Day card on Wednesday, the 4th of July, followed by racing on Friday through Sunday afternoon. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet will feature three exciting stakes races, beginning with the Bertrando Stakes, highlighting our special 4th of July card. Other stakes races include the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes on Saturday, July 7th, and the Grade 3 Los Alamitos Derby on Saturday, July 14th. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider for major daytime thoroughbred racing in America's longest home stretch. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet opens on Thursday, June 28th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific. For more info, go to losalamitos.com.